the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to Camera One, Camera Two, episode of the Game Bitcoins podcast here with my friends Tom and Aiden Carranza, CDP headquarters. We're going to find out what they're up to, how they're feeling, what they're doing. Aiden just turned me down. I offered him a spot on my beer league football team, so he's playing hockey instead. So I'm not. But we'll get to that. First, the sponsors. We have two sponsors. Do you guys want to do the reads for the sponsors? Like, do you know enough about Bull Bitcoin to tell me why Bull Bitcoin's a good sponsor? Okay, go ahead.
All right, so the first sponsor, Bull Bitcoin. Bull Bitcoin is a Bitcoin exchange. And I guess my favorite feature, everyone's favorite feature about Bull Bitcoin, is that they don't custody your Bitcoin when you buy it. You need to put in your wallet and your address. And you buy the Bitcoin, you put in your address, and then the Bitcoin hits your Bitcoin wallet. So it's the best Bitcoin exchange in the world.
What about KYC free?
Yeah, go to post office. It's still happening, right?
They play about like 2 weeks, I think.
Okay, yeah. So KYC free Bitcoin. All you need is print off your QR code. It's your wallet QR code, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
your account, your Bull Bitcoin QR, yeah.
You show up with cash, and you can buy your non-KYC Bitcoin.
Nice. Okay. Anything else? You can pay your bills on Bull Bitcoin.
Okay.
Credit card, mortgage, cell phone, property.
Wire transfers.
You can do wire transfers. You can pay other people.
You can dollar cost average, travel like on Bull Bitcoin.
Yeah, you can get your paycheck deposited there, which is sick. I would never do that because my employer messed that up. There's a big story with that. Can't talk about that on the air. But use the Bull Bitcoin. CDP something is the code, or iwantbitcoin.ca. Do you know enough about EasyDNS to do the EasyDNS read?
I don't.
EasyDNS is the best place to host your content and to host your website via website. Do you know how many Bitcoiners hoard websites? Tons. Sailor, famous website hoarder, right? He's got like love.com, hope.com. I don't know what else he's got. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's a weird, scarce asset.
He says there's no second best, but his actions tell me something different. It's websites that are second best, I think. So you can host your website there. You can do Bitcoin nodes, virtual private server stuff, master relays, whatever. Anything you want to do, Mark will figure it out for you. Have an email address to your domain. We have canadianbitcoiners.com. We use it all the time. We don't have an email yet though. We're probably going to get one this month, I hope, if we remember. And then on top of that, the book Unassailable written by Mark. We never talked about this because he told me to stop talking about it, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. Your stuff will never get taken down just because you think that policy decisions being made are no good and he's hosting your website. He went through it during the convoy, and he's hardened in the fire, let's say. Okay, he's been there, and you can go there, easydns.com. I think our code is CDP Media to get half off right when you buy. So when are you gonna start a website? You should start one.
Yeah, I should.
Yeah,
I had one back in the day. My dad helped me out with it.
What was it like?
It was built mini sticks. I would review mini sticks.
Oh my god!
Mini sticks.
I love it.
I mean, they're all basically the same, are they not?
No, curves different, man. Taves have the best curves.
Were you doing the curves on the stove?
No, these were like the composite mini sticks.
Yeah.
These were like the composite mini sticks. These were like already pre-curved.
You would over melt it and destroy the stick.
Those were like those plastic.
Yeah.
So those were the best.
Those were good. Getting
composite mini sticks.
Oh, yeah. There was like one or two mothers in the neighborhood who really knew how to like work the blade on the stove.
And they looked at the best curve.
Yeah. Like they were.
You couldn't use your back end though.
Chef's kiss. You don't need it. It's mini sticks.
Yeah.
Who cares? Tell people a bit about who you are. People know who you guys are. But
you go ahead.
I'm gonna put the chat up on the screen just in case people are taking time off their work to do this.
Sure. Yeah. Tom Carranza went into tech, worked at Oracle for a little while, then quit, started Rockstar Real Estate to help Canadians buy hard assets to front run the government debasement. And been doing that with my brother, Nick, who's not here. He's on a Disney cruise.
Nice guy.
I think everybody should know that he is on a Disney cruise right now, hanging out with Cinderella. And we started that in 2007. Rockstar was incorporated in 2008. We've been working with Canadians, you know, buying properties, rental properties all across Ontario for a long time. And that's it. That's Rockstar Real Estate. And Aiden.
Yeah, I'm Aiden. I'm 21 years old. I'm just about to graduate Western University. Bitcoin now, I guess, class of 2020. Definitely interest in monetary policy.
And we're obviously best friends.
But yeah, I've gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Now I definitely have a keen interest in economics, macroeconomics. And yeah, I've been able to work at Rockstar the last couple summers as well.
Do you like that? Working at Rockstar, more specifically like for your dad?
I do, but I don't really feel like it's for my dad because at the office, I'm not really talking to him every day. It's not like I'm taking like orders or really working like right underneath him. So I feel like I'm more like, it's more just like helping the family business, and I like it a lot.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to look at it, actually.
And if anything, I probably work closer with my uncle than my dad.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't really do anything there.
I've seen like, you know, talk to people about stuff in the fridge. Like, when you give them shit about something they said earlier in the day, coffee, the podcast. I've never actually seen you do, if you say that you help people with hard assets, I assume you mean real estate.
Now, I don't think I really have a real estate offer anymore. Yeah.
No, it's pretty cool though, because my mom's in a couple times a week or once a week, I guess. So it's cool for me because, yeah, a lot of my family's around.
Sure. That's great. I do like that. There's something to be said about strong families and the time they spend together, like producing stuff, whether it's like building a deck at home or working together in the family business. I always like that idea. And I will say that in the last, I don't know how many years I've been thinking like this, but I remember when I was a kid, the first thing I wanted to do when I finished school was move out. And obviously I didn't. I had like no job. I was working at a pawn shop after university for a couple of years, went to teacher's college, other stuff. But the thing that kind of changed my mind about wanting to move out is if I look now at the friends of mine who are sort of most successful, most balanced, it's the kids who stayed with their parents long enough.
Huh, interesting.
You know why, I think, anyway. Because if the parents are willing to support you and can support you, they want to help you make what's going to wind up being the three biggest decisions of your life, right? It's going to be what you do for work, where you work, and who you marry.
Yeah.
And they want to have a say in that. And if you're out wild in some, you know, slum apartment, you know, like, you're not going to have that influence. And it might be a pain. I won't ask you about that. But I would say the number of talking twos I got between like 23 and 26 ended up being worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something nice about, I'm going to be moving back at home now full time.
Yeah.
From Western. And it'll be a change for sure.
What are you going to do for work? Are you going to stay at Rockstar?
I'll be back at Rockstar.
Yeah. Full time. Yeah.
Full time at Rockstar.
Salaried employee.
Yeah.
Benefits.
Yep.
I'll let it all.
May 21st.
Yeah, I'll be there. Bobby now.
But yeah, I'll be full time at Rockstar.
Nice. I don't know. I don't know if there's a better situation. Is it Rockstar's a great business anyway? You guys are doing the right things there.
Yeah, I mean, Rockstar shouldn't exist. Like, that's like the running joke for our business.
Yeah.
Our business is a second order effect of a broken monetary system, and we exist as a symptom of the system. Like, really, our business should not exist. So,
Yeah. It's
the whole thing is a little weird for me. But to have him coming back, I'm a little torn on it. I think I've told him this. Have I told you that?
Yeah.
And I learned a lot going, you know, working in corporate Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I learned what I don't like.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of skills. They put me through some formal training. We're a little bit of an informal place. So, yeah, I'm slightly torn on it. But the mission and the purpose is good. So we'll see how this goes. I think our business is a little bit of a crossroads itself, right? Because we've been doing real estate for so long and really helping people. And we're trying to figure out, what do we do with Bitcoin? How do we do it? How do we bring it into Rockstar even more than we have, and we've been aggressively trying to do that.
Yeah.
So
I kind of think you're right. Well, let's talk a bit about the Rockstar business and maybe how it relates to what we saw from Minister Freeland last week in the federal Liberals budget. We were talking a bit before we went on air about the sort of what we think is a lack of understanding from people who think that capital gains is only going to affect the quote unquote wealthiest Canadians. The people who are making a boatload of money, exercising their capital gains at more than 250K a year. I don't think that's the case. You guys don't think that's the case. What are people missing there? Maybe we start there. Why is it going to affect a lot more than just the 0.1% that was bandied about last week?
I think there's a disproportionate amount of people in Canada that produce a lot of opportunity for the rest of us.
Yeah.
and that productive class sees this as a threat. So when you force a lot of people to reconsider why they're going to be in Canada mm-hmm. by raising the taxes on what they're building, because they're using corporations to build it. If you have medical doctors, if you have people building corporations now, and I've seen this in the last week, I've seen more pushback on why am I here in Canada anyway? These are people who create jobs, who service and provide value to the community, questioning why they exist here in Canada. If that productive class decides to leave more and more, then the people who don't think they're going to be affected, they're just going to have less things available to them.
Yeah.
And I think it's really just short-sighted. I mean, I see this on Twitter right now. I saw somebody on Twitter, I don't want to mention the name, but they were just saying deficits don't matter. And I'm like, how is everybody, they don't want
prominent person?
Yeah, I don't even want to mention the name. And I'm like, you know, left-leaning person. But I've never seen anyone in the productive class look at something like a change to capital gains and think that was good. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anybody who's not employed by getting handouts from the government look at these things and say it's good. I only see people who are receiving the benefits of government handouts and that kind of stuff look at this and say, yeah, it's good. Or you're just kind of not, you're young and you don't get it.
Well, do you get it? You're young. Yeah, I think I totally get it. And I think a lot of my people in my generation, my age, kind of get it. So now I'm graduating and people my age are seeing the salary that they're going to be making coming to university. They see the price of rent. They see the
price that I've ever
made. Yeah, they see the price of groceries. And I know, so I have some friends that are in nursing and they're like, if I can get out of Canada, go to Texas, I can go to Florida, really anywhere in the States, like, why would I not do that? Why would I stay in Canada? What are they saying about stuff like you finding a place to live? Rents are one thing, but I mean, mortgages and the sort of talk, and even his budget last week about the first-time homebuyers, quote-unquote, benefits, comes into the chat.
No, I see the audio is echoing or something.
The quote-unquote, is it?
I don't know. Is it just them?
Echo. Your audio is echo. I can't really see.
Maybe I can figure
that.
Probably the camera. Anyway, continue talking.
Yeah,
everyone's going back home. So, like, everyone's going to be moving back with their parents. And if they are moving downtown because of jobs they got down there, like, the parents are still helping them fund that. No job at a university is going to be supporting, like, a living in downtown Toronto alone.
I think I'm surprised to hear that, like, your generation seems to be aware of what's going on and kind of how the incomes really that they're getting paid isn't going to produce the life that they want to live. They seem much more aware. I guess that's a sign of the time. You come out of high school.
Yeah.
You come to university, you look around, you realize, holy shit.
And I have one friend who had a job offer, one in Ontario and one in Alberta, Calgary, and he chose to move to Calgary.
And to take the job in Calgary.
Oh, that's recent?
Yeah, just now. He drove to Calgary last week.
Did he purposely apply for jobs in Calgary?
Yeah.
He's born here.
Yep. From Ontario.
Family's here.
Yep.
And he applied specifically in Calgary.
The job was either going to be live in downtown Toronto or like move to Calgary and live downtown Calgary. And he's like, it just makes sense for me to go to Calgary. I'll be
what kind of job? Engineering?
Engineering job. Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Like, you become kind of a not nomadic, but you're not tied to anything. If you have one of these jobs in like STEM, like business, I don't know, what's another good example of this? Nursing is another good example.
Totally. You have a lot of flexibility.
People want those jobs in their jurisdictions. I don't know what's going to happen in places like Ontario, where it seems like we're unwilling to talk about the lack of supply. And I'd be curious to hear your take on that in housing. But everyone thinks that the fix is like the government taking on more responsibility, either by backing loans or by like building houses. Mm-hmm. I'm a little worried when I hear language like we're going to unlock another 4 million homes. Like, I don't hear houses in there and I don't hear build in there, but
or skills,
anything. Like, I don't know how, like, who's doing it and why do you have to unlock them? Are they locked right now? Is it my house you want? Like,
there's
what,
a warehouse
like,
of homes.
What exactly?
There's a warehouse of homes.
We can't find
north.
The key.
There's a whole, you didn't hear about this? There's a huge warehouse up north with all the homes are in there and they're going to unlock them.
I know.
And they're going to drive them down the 400.
I just don't know what you're supposed to, like, what do you say to that? And like, you're seeing on the supply side. Is there like is there really an unwillingness to build, like I'm being told by people in the industry not named Tom Carrazza, or is there some other reason they're not building? I mean, in my head, I'm like, these guys build homes for a living. They want to build subdivisions because that's how they earn their keep. Mm-hmm. They're not building them. It's not because they suddenly don't want to make money. What's the reason they're not being built?
You can't plan. So like the developers we speak to, especially some of the medium-sized developers, if they don't know what the cost of money is going to be 18 months from now, How do they project the sale price? How do they project how much they can spend on labor, mm-hmm. material, what size of home to build, what type of home to build? If you can't make a projection, because you have to depend on the central bank that they're going to keep the cost of money the same. Mm-hmm. And now they've all been burned. I know multiple medium-sized developers who have lots in Hamilton, St. Catharines. They've gone through the zoning process. So they buy these lots. They carry this lot for a year, year and a half. Out of their own pocket, they buy it.
Yeah.
So they take the capital to buy it. They take the risk of owning this. They spend the money to make the payments on that while they're going through a rezoning process. Then they go through the rezones. They get it rezoned to build maybe a beautiful duplex on there or even a quad, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But the interest rates then kept increasing on them, that if they're carrying six or seven lots, now all of a sudden they don't have the money to carry those lots through the build.
Yeah.
They have to desperately sell a couple lots to just carry the other lots. Never mind taking more capital to build. Mm-hmm. Interest rates went up so fast, so quickly on them, they can't. And now they're trying to make projections into the future. And they're coming to us and they're like, Tom, what do you think the cost of money is going to be a year from now or 18 months from now? Because I don't understand how to do the projections on these builds. If you're a huge builder, like a Mattamy or a Tribute, these guys are making, they are playing with different amounts of capital. They can make some different decisions. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking infill projects that could benefit all of us in the community, some of these builders, they're just kind of holding back. They're trying to survive right now. So when you play games with the cost of money by changing the cost of money so quickly, so rapidly, then it puts the fear of God into people who say, I don't know what to expect in the future. Mm-hmm. Not only am I scared to build, I have to protect the capital I have to survive. So I'm just going to sit on any liquidity that I have until I'm comfortable that I know what the cost of money is going to be 18 months from now. And that's kind of like the, just the downside of central planning. Like when you have a complex system, you can't center. And I know that, like I'm preaching to the choir.
No, here. It's good. It's good to hear it again anyways.
But this is from multiple builders, mm-hmm. who are telling us this. They don't know that. And then on top of that, where do they get the skills?
Yeah.
How many plumbers are we creating? How many electricians are we creating? How many plumbers, if you want to try and get a plumber to do something in your own house right now, you're calling a friend of a friend who's pulling in a favor.
Who's calling anyone?
Yeah.
I gotta just go on YouTube. Yeah. I have no choice. I can't get a even if it was something. Okay, so you can't see this on camera, but there's like backflow valves here that have to be cleaned every 8 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it in the spring yet. It'll be my first time doing it probably this weekend. I'm not calling anybody, because even getting a guy to come to your house is $300. You're gonna have a lot of people just learning. To your point about the building thing, I saw a great stat a little while ago. Shortly after the budget, it was like, so maybe like middle of last week or Friday, there's only something like 15 or 20,000 carpenters in the country. Those guys would have to be working every minute of every day for the full stretch of the next 7 years or 6 years to get those houses built by 2030. It's just, it's not feasible. And we're not bringing in, Conestoga is not bringing in any skilled trades people. No. They're not.
And there's an art to mixing things like cement. How do you mix it in the winter? How do you mix it?
You think
it in
the fall? Don't know that? Hey, come on, I'm making the cement in my sleeve.
But where are we training this stuff? This stuff is generally handed down, and the people who handed that down are dying off.
Yeah.
Like the all joking aside, the old Italians I know who know this, like an art form, who pass away, that skill's then not passed down. So then you're depending on the colleges to teach this kind of stuff. And when I look at our education system at every single level, I don't see that being taught.
Yeah.
So now we have future that you can't really, if you're a builder, what are interest rates going to look like 18 months from now? Where do I get the skills?
Yeah.
And then who's buying? Who's qualifying to buy? And then where are incomes allowing for the qualification? And this is why I think we're in a future where longer amortizations are going to either UBI or longer amortizations in the name of helping the first time buyer. I can't see how a government doesn't come out and say, hey, first time home buyers, we want you to have a home. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we've introduced the first time home buyer magic formula plan.
75-year AM.
Yeah. We'll put you in debt for 100 years, but we're not going to say that. Yeah. But now we've lowered families payment. In debt for So although the real estate market, look, we're in the real estate industry, and I'll be the first to say that real estate prices are way too high, but they are a symptom of the system.
Yes.
So how do we collapse real estate prices when we all know M2 and GDP must keep going up to service the debt?
Yeah.
So how do we get the lower real estate prices? And this is, I think, goes to Jeff Booth's point, where the system is just acting out and you can see where the end game takes us, and it's really not good.
Are you okay? So I remember when I was in school, there was like a general sort of distaste for the trades, right? People didn't want to be tradespeople. It was go to university at any cost, take whatever bullshit degree they will let you in for at any school and don't look back.
Yeah.
That can't still be the case.
No, I don't, I mean, maybe in some people's minds, but I don't think so. My friends, the ones that are like the most well off now at my age are the guys that didn't go to university, didn't take out student loans, yeah, started working right after high school, like plumbers and electricians, and now they're killing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think it's definitely, there's been a flip there. For sure.
But like, is it, I guess that this is a hard question to answer, but the trend, you know, was, let's say 90%, you know, people wanted to go to university as a first option. And now that number is what in your view, in your opinion, is it 80? It needs to be something like 50.
Yeah.
Max.
I still think it, at least in my like circle or my network, and maybe it's probably, there's like an Oakville bias of their, like those parents want their children to go to university
for sure.
But no, I'd say it's less for sure. Yeah, I'd still say it's probably 80% of people are like trying at least to go to university, yeah, or their parents are wanting them to. And I think that needs to adjust for sure. I agree with you.
And I think so many of those people have their heads in the sand. Like I have many discussions with parents my age who have children younger than Aiden. So like finishing high school, about to go into university. And they're like, we're really going to help out our kids get their first home. And I'm like, really? Okay, let's do a little bit of math on this. You have three children. Mm-hmm. So you want them to live close by. So you're saying you want them to live in Burlington.
Yeah.
Okay, great place. So you're going to have a home, like let's start with a townhome. You want to have a townhome. Okay. So we're looking at $1 million or higher.
Yeah.
They're going to put 20% down. So you need $200,000 liquid cash to help your kids each get a townhome. So that's 600,000 liquid that you need to help. And then you're leaving each of those children with an $800,000 mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I go, the days of my generation thinking it's time to help the kids, that ship has so sailed that my generation doesn't get it. They don't understand that that's gone.
Yeah, but is it gone, or is it just now that those numbers are bigger and the help, like people still want to help? The thing I would even say is that at $200,000 per kid, the bigger problem in my view is that you're probably doing that at 50 something or 60 something, your kid's first home. I think I said yesterday on the show, in 2022, the average age for the first home of a Canadian was 36, probably let's say it's 38 or 39 now, you know, in, so what are you, 24?
21. Yeah.
Okay. So 15 years or 16 years from now, you know, you're going to be 65 years old. Fuck. Are you going to take on, let's say you're just like an average, you don't have the business. You're going to, you know, take out 800,000 in equity or more at that point, depending on where the price of real estate is. And like, what do you do? Right. It's such a hard decision.
And
to there's make.
Massive. My point is that it still leaves massive mortgages.
Yeah.
So you're creating a debt slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
So great. You quote unquote helped, but now this person is tied to that mortgage for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Like, so now what? This is just a work camp. Now we have an area of,
well, that's what they want though. Like part of the budget was like to take out your RRSP up to $65,000 at 36 years old. Like that's, how many people got 60 grand? I don't have 60 grand in my RRSP. I mean, I have a pension, but I don't think it's going to be there. I'm not wasting money putting it in somewhere. It's going to be locked for 30 more years or whatever the number is. Who's got this? When you add longer AM to withdrawing all your retirement savings to real estate that costs $1 million to get into now, it is a working for the rest of your life thing. It's how it looks to me.
Work camp.
Yeah.
Like I just can't. I feel like, yeah, I guess it's just frustrating. Like the highest and best use of Joey's time to me, when I look at you, smart, intelligent, hardworking guy,
handsome, committed to what you're doing. For sure, strong.
Yeah. Decent football player, apparently. I mean, worse we have no year. Actual proof.
Worse every year.
A few footballs.
We saw a couple of footballs in the closet. Yeah.
Yeah, I play football. Look at my footballs. But the highest and best use of, like, for me, as somebody in the community, and I look at someone like you, I'm like, honestly, I love what you do, what you and Len are doing. I feel like that you are serving the community.
No, I appreciate that.
Absolutely serving the community. But really, there's probably many other things that you could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to be spending your time educating everybody on why the system's a bit messed up and to open their eyes.
Yeah.
And as a member of this community, I would love that you were putting your efforts in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're living in a system where you're forced to do this, where we're forced to have Rockstar.
Everyone's forced to speculate on everything.
it's, you know, and now I'm starting to get mad at this thing. I didn't intend to come here and get pissed off.
It happens to me every time. I get mad in here a lot. That's why the window's open, because I just wind up sweating. I don't know how to fix that. The speculating on everything is a good point. Like, real estate is one thing. At least you can live in real estate and hope that other people will live in the real estate that you own. But man, what's the excuse for speculating on stuff like NFTs, NVIDIA stock at all-time highs, you know, options trading available to everyone and their brother and uncle on Wealthsimple. No courses, no education required.
Yeah.
Speculation is the name of the game now for everyone. And one of the reasons I think that's the case is, and I would love to hear your comments on this, Aiden.
Yeah.
A lot of people at your age and younger, or even a little older than you, because I thought you were a little older than 21, they don't see a way that saving and acting responsibly makes a difference. So what do? They just live in the now. Like, credit card debt's sky high. Yeah. People are buying all kinds of stuff. They're balling out of control. Yeah,
I agree totally. And I think you were talking about this on Len on your podcast. It's like, why are people buying these random cryptocurrencies and NFTs? And I think before you understand Bitcoin, people see these, like, whatever on Twitter, these like 500x returns, 2000x returns. And that's people like, that's your only hope. What else are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And until you understand,
yeah, so you
like
can empathize. Yeah.
You can like,
yeah, I can see why. And I think this is kind of, we were talking about this, I think, before we started this.
Like, what else are you going to put your money as?
That's someone that in my question.
Where else are you going
to
put
what it? What are you supposed to do?
Like, do you take a 1 in 100 bet and buy like whatever coin?
Pepe coin.
Or do you like
put, Len
like,
has some good ideas.
Or do you put your $50 into the S&P 500 and just still lose purchasing power?
Well, 7% a year used to be enough. And now, you know, the stuff you actually want. I mean, if you're just buying golden grams and fucking donuts every week, 7% is fine. But if you want a home or a car,
a ribeye,
I would never.
Or a vacation.
It's funny you're saying the 7% number, because that's something like, if you look at M2 growth in this country from the year 2000, it is 7% compound growth since the year 2000.
Yeah,
We've all kind of accepted, or at least I have, that like at a bare minimum, you have to grow your net worth 7% a year. But to me, it gets worse than that, because when I looked at the Federal Reserve's asset base since 2008, and to me, that's the year that capitalism absolutely broke.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that was it was breaking for a long time. But in 2008, if you just look at the St. Louis Federal Reserve's chart on their assets, in 2008, just goes haywire. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you look at the asset growth since 2008 of the Federal Reserve, it grew 14% compounded annually since 2008 till present day. And then if you look at the monetary, compounded annually. Yeah. So then if you look at the monetary base, and this is why I think the 7%, which I've been saying a lot, 7% is the number that we all need to beat, but I think it's way low. And this maybe goes to Michael Saylor's point, is that the monetary base is growing 13%. Mm-hmm. So the monetary base in the US is growing 13%. And the monetary base acts as collateral to banks who then lend, you know, offer lending, new mortgages are created, new debt is created. That puts demand on things like real estate. So really watching M2 alone to me isn't I need to kind of go one step deeper and look at the monetary base. And if the monetary base is growing at 13%, I feel like, you know, Joey, you, Aiden, you, we all need to grow our net worth, unfortunately, not 7% a year, probably closer to 15% compounded a year.
Yeah, it ends up being a lot higher.
And then this is ridiculous. Now, if you get out a calculator, have you done this?
I haven't, but okay, go ahead. You do that? I'm going to move this
hand. If you get out a calculator, like, so let's say that you, let's say you have a $60,000 a year job, $60,000 a year job.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that's high, low. I'm just picking.
That's gotta be like that. I think the average starting salary in Canada is probably like a lot less than that.
I think so too.
Yeah,
so
I would agree.
Okay. Yeah. So like we can pick any number.
Sure.
But 60,000, we'll just stick with it as a middle number. I don't know.
Sure.
60,000. You're fortunate enough to get up to 60,000 and you're like, I've made it.
Cool.
And then now if I go,
I made it.
If I go times 1.15, so multiply that by 1.15, because that's the number I need to grow annually, that salary, to just basically keep base with the debasement. Mm-hmm. So if you do that and you hit equals 10 times, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
this is what your salary has to be in
9,
10 years.
10. So in 10 years, your salary has to be 242,000. That's really just to keep pace.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's do another 10 years.
I know. You're really cooking after that, right? Like even 5 years.
11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That $60,000 salary
in
20 years, has to be $981,000 a year.
Start a podcast.
To break even.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's at, and this is why
yeah, that's
the
insane.
System is actually broken.
And by the way, that's no savings.
No savings.
That's no additional housing, vacations, that's kids. Just, that's nothing else. That's no additional
golden,
output.
What did you say? Golden Grahams or whatever those
Golden Grahams and donuts. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even the know widgets. What Golden Grahams are. Yeah. It's but like, isn't that absolutely now not ridiculous?
It is bonkers. 981,000. Yeah. And people don't understand this, right? When you talk to them about inflation, the first thing they say is, well, it's corporations doing this. My friends, even if corporations had that kind of power, okay, they wouldn't be able to exercise it. It's the money supply that's causing these issues.
Totally.
People must understand that. Do you guys at your age, are you guys in the, not you, but like, are your buddies in the greedy corporations?
They no.
can't be. They're not.
But I still think when you go to the grocery store, everyone's still like, I hate Loblaws. But I don't think it's like, no, corporations suck and they're the issue. I think people understand that it's the dollar.
You think?
No. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, your buddies maybe don't. Yeah, but like the
that's
more,
what I'm saying. Yeah, like maybe like my roommates and stuff. But you're right. I guess, yeah, no, not everybody. But I think everyone does now understand inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You've
like,
been able
like
to
we did it before. Like when the next stimulus checks come out and people are going to see the price of goods go up again.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to be more pissed than they were last time.
Yeah.
You've been able to orange pill some of your roommates.
Yeah.
A little
not
bit.
Not completely. But yeah. yeah. Mm. I try.
The thing that someone, I won't say who, but I had guests here. A few months ago, someone else came to the podcast studio. And one of the things that we were talking about before the show is this idea of like orange pilling your buddies. And it's funny, like you think that your buddies are smart and they understand and they get it and you're explaining Bitcoin to them and they're nodding along. And then you ask, are you going to buy any? They say no, or I don't know, or I'll think about it. I am of the opinion now, and this other guest was too, that the reason your friends don't buy Bitcoin is because they actually don't have disposable income.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. And no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to go down correct. That road. But I think that's a big problem.
Because
part of
in
the
their
equation.
Mind, if they say, okay, Joey, I believe what you're saying, but if I put $200 in there
and it goes to 400, I can't lose it.
Not yeah. only, yeah, I can't lose it, yeah. but and it goes to $400. Okay, like, great, man. What has that done for me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's doubled.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say the market cap of Bitcoin doubles and we're all kind of celebrating that.
Yeah.
But in their mind, they're like, Joey, I took $200, I turned into $400. I'd rather just have some fun with the $200
yeah.
than kind of pray and hope it goes to $400.
It does yeah, suck.
It's just
sucks.
Hard to save. It's just hard to save.
And that's the thing that just is irritating with this system yeah. and that nobody kind of sees it. And then when you, and that's why I really believe at the next, like UBI to me is it is coming.
Mm-hmm.
It is 100% coming. Whether you want it or I want it, or Aiden wants it, it's coming because what's going to happen is the tax base in this country is going to be so small compared to the debt load. I mean, it already is so small. And then when you have technology, like you can't fight technology.
Mm-hmm.
Like technology, unfortunately, is the enemy of the government's current monetary system because
yeah.
technology is making things so efficient, everything so cheaper and wiping out so many jobs that the tax base is eroding. And if you look at the way they calculate GDP, which is going to be a combination of labor or population growth, whatever you want to call it, and then productivity, and then capital, or said differently, debt.
Yeah.
So if those are the three components, population growth in all of the West is decreasing.
Mm-hmm.
Productivity is massively increasing through mm-hmm. technology.
Some.
I would say a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we can debate that. But then debt growth is the counterbalance. So for example, if Amazon wipes out a whole bunch of retailers here in, you know, Dundas, Ontario, or mm-hmm. all around the country, and they have been over the last few years, those are jobs that are lost.
Yeah.
Those are things that the government can no longer tax. So their tax base erodes.
Yeah.
Amazon then gets the benefit of this and grows bigger. Right. So now we are centralizing into, this is kind of like Jeff's boost theory in the price of tomorrow. We're centralizing kind of power in mm-hmm. some of these big companies. The only counterbalance they have to that is to increase debt because they can control debt directly because they control the money printer.
Okay.
So now for every increase in technology that you have to have a counterbalance in the increase of debt. And if technology is increasing exponentially,
mm-hmm.
which I would argue that it is, and I know you're saying some, I would say that the debt is increasing now exponentially. And as by way of example, the annualized interest payments in the US right now at this current interest rate is $1.1 trillion annualized mm-hmm. current day.
Mm-hmm.
If interest rates don't change by December, do you know what it is?
No.
1.6 trillion. I'm not talking December 2028.
Yeah.
I mean, December 2024. Yeah.
6 months from now.
Yeah. When we started Rockstar Real Estate, the interest payments on the US debt was $350 billion.
Yeah.
And we were freaking out. We were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And now we're going from 1.1 to 1.6 this December.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the path. I think this is why, remember I was saying my attitude's a little changed in the last little bit, because to me now we've entered the debt spiral moment and we're in it. And I feel like the next 5 years, I'm not talking 10, like the next 3 to 5 years to me is very serious.
Yeah.
And I can feel it. And I know that might sound silly, but everything we're discussing here of Aiden's group, your age group.
Now you can feel it. You can feel it.
And there's a vibe shift. Yeah, there's a vibe shift. And I don't like what I feel. And I know that might sound like a little, you know, airy fairy or whatever, like feel you're feeling something, but it's just like, I don't like it. And I also think that there's goodness out there in that Bitcoin is bringing together people who I really think are going to have a lot of influence in the world.
Yeah.
And it's possibly the greatest wealth transfer that I'm ever going to see in my lifetime, if I'm lucky, so that people like you, Joey, Len, Aiden, yourself, people like Anthony in our office, they have some Bitcoin. And there's going to be a wealth transfer to me into the hands of people that I want having serious influence in the world. And I think that's going to happen, but I just think it's going to be a bumpy road over the next few years to get there.
What do we do about stuff like on the side of like automation and technology? I'm with you that it does, you know, it should increase productivity. I see Canada pushing against this in so many ways. And it to me, it's like clear why we want this kind of low wage labor to keep GDP artificially high, right? If we can pay a million immigrants a year, $15 an hour to burn the shit out of your coffee at Tim Hortons, then they'll do it forever. They'll never change to a machine or an automated checkout or whatever, right? They'll just keep doing it because that's what Tim Hortons wants. That's what the country wants. Everyone's happy, right? But there's going to be a moment at some point where one of these big corporations is just like, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to start using the tech. And then I worry that you're going to see governments push back and say like, no, we are going to tax the computer. Actually, Floyd Marinescu says this too. Like there needs to be a tax on AI work. Because if there's not, the tax base is going to go to zero, just like you're saying. My big concern is like, if I think about 3 to 5 years, the big problem is that your generation, like we're talking about, is already looking at the exit sign. They're like, nah, I could stay or I could go.
Yeah.
Because why? Everything here is too expensive, right? That's one problem. It's hard for me to find a place to live. That's problem number two. But the third problem that we didn't talk about is that it's harder and harder for mom and dad to help you find a house and help you buy a house. And so you're like, what am I staying here for? Not to mention that you guys, I think, are like the most sad, sexless, relationship-free. There's no roots. None of you guys have girlfriends, roots, or anything, right? Like most of you guys now, where when I was finishing university, I had a girlfriend already. Not the one I ended up marrying, but a different one. There was like reason to stay in like a province at least. Yeah. Now there's just nothing tying you guys down. Then when you add on top of that you can find a job working remotely or become one of these like digital nomad types, there's no one's staying, and the tax base you're the tax base.
And it's weird too, because when all these entry-level jobs are just all automated, those are gone. Like what are you gonna do? Like you're coming out of
when AI is taking your order.
Well, like how do you learn? Like, you know, credit to you and to you, Tom, and you know, your wife, I'm sure, you know, you're well adjusted, you have social skills. Like when I talk to you, I can see that you've done this before. But there's a lot of people who needed that job at McDonald's to learn how to speak to an adult.
Totally.
And didn't get it. And so now what?
I'm asking the same question. What happens? Like you can't work at McDonald's. There's no more. They're getting rid of the cashiers, which hopefully they bring those back.
It is nuts, actually. There's no cashiers. Suck. I know. Yeah.
They do suck.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what happens.
Every time I try to weigh my own bag on that thing,
well, it just tells you, it tells you something in there.
We were looking at videos the other day.
Whole point. There should be something in there. What do you mean?
We were looking at videos of like the automated
the French fry.
Yeah, the French fry flipper at McDonald's. Like it's nuts.
Yeah.
They have an automated fry flipper?
Not yet.
Oh, one of our clients works for Motoman Canada. They're selling so many of those arms out into California right now. That like hundreds of these things that will
do all the fry flipping
for you. That's active. Right? Listen, a good friend of mine used to work for Tesla. He now works for one of the biggest companies in the world that creates the factories that Chinese and American EV you know, companies will use to build out their factories.
Okay.
They have you heard of Lights Out Factories?
No.
So he's just
but I know exactly what this is going to be by the name.
Yeah. So like he just finished the factory of the extension in Texas where they you don't need the lights on because they have three levels of robots that now have the dexterity to pull up the screws. And so you don't need HVAC requirements. You still have to keep it a certain temperature. You don't need and there still are humans, but you don't need an employee cafeteria. Mm-hmm. You don't need an HR. You don't need an employee parking lot.
Yeah.
You need a lot less lighting.
Is there still DEI for the robot staff?
Absolutely. Of course. Joey, how dare you? How dare you?
I want to check on that.
How dare you?
Got to find out.
So this is happening right now. So I was just with him last night for dinner. I'm like, you know, is this factory life? He's like, oh yeah, that one's that. We're on to the next one. You got to see what we're building now.
Yeah.
And so this is to my point of where the technology is increasing. It just is happening now at such a pace that we're not even exposed to it. And I think Canada is so inconsequential in the global world and the global economy that, yeah, we can do in this country we want. Listen, we're a pretty small GDP.
Big time.
That if we're going to develop these factories in Texas and in Mexico, and, you know, this stuff is going to affect all of us right here. And it's just, it's happening, I think, faster and a speed that's also just alarming me. Like, I had no idea that we're doing this. Like, we have Fry robot arms going out into places en masse. Did you see the Wendy's video? Did you see that one yesterday?
I don't think so.
It's AI taking your order at Wendy's.
Yeah, I didn't
where see somebody's
that.
Saying,
or what about the Freshie or whatever that?
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
It's which like it's like some Indian girl in India on a screen taking your order.
Oh, really?
And then like someone at the
That's crazy.
Hey, AI is going to take those jobs too.
I know. Even the cheap Indian labor, it's better to just have some robot do it.
Yeah.
And like, by the way, I don't want to like shit on Anchor or StreamYard or whatever. StreamYard's fine. Anchor, I sent an email to last week because they have a bunch of new like AI services to like do your audio editing and stuff like that. I sent them an email and said, I want to try the suite, but I want to try it for free for a month because I'm paying for all this stuff somewhere else. And I'll try yours for a month. And if I like it, I'll switch everything over. It was a fucking robot responding to me.
No.
Yeah. And I could tell it was an AI response. And I wrote back. I'm like, no, I need a person to look at this. Boy. This is not the response I need. Right. And so the other thing too, is that people now are so accustomed to just like getting a terrible level of service and support thanks to these AI bots. Like instead of like actually doing anything about it, they'll just be like, oh fuck, it's another AI bot. I guess I'll just have my fries with no ketchup. I guess I'll just eat my breakfast burritos with no salsa in the bag, just like old times. Like, you know what I mean? Like everyone just expects the service to be bad. And so the service just keeps getting worse. Everyone is making money except for people who really like should be contributing to the economy through those jobs, through that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
They're not getting their fair share.
There's something really cool that you're doing.
Of work.
That, you know, you and Len are doing something really cool for me is that you're bringing people together who are thinking in this way.
Yeah.
And I just think I really want to push you guys to do live events with people all across the country. And the reason that I want you guys to do this.
You fund it. Okay?
The reason I want you guys to do this is because when I was, you know, I was over in England. Am I allowed to say where?
Sure.
Len will allow me.
I told you, Len's protesting. He's not going to be on the show for sure.
I did have to change my shirt. I did have to change my shirt. To
Aiden came in wearing a real Bedford shirt.
So I was over in last week with my brother, Aiden's uncle. And it was really cool hanging out with Bitcoiners and having discussions. And you make bonds at a different level. And I think that gives me hope. I'm like, oh my gosh, there is a community. Like we all know each other over the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really great.
Yeah.
But when you go and you hang out in person,
different.
Yeah. It's completely different. And honestly, that gives me hope. You know how sometimes we'll say Bitcoin's like a life raft? Mm-hmm. I feel like the human connections that you make of Bitcoiners together is really just exponentially an even better life raft because you're just making those bonds.
Yeah.
And I think if we can do that across the country and across the world even more, that's kind of like the safety valve. That's the outlet. That's the hope that we all need because there's this old dying system that's full of people who are grasping onto it, who are telling us it doesn't matter about capital gains increases and it doesn't matter about deficits because they're benefiting from that or they don't know better, mm-hmm. to be fair.
Yeah.
But there's a whole other group of people out there that have the ability to make change. And for me, if we can get those people all together hanging out more, mm-hmm. it really has the potential to be powerful and it gives me hope. So that's something that you and Len need to do.
This is all just, I agree. Did you hear anything in there about funding?
No.
Listen, I didn't come up with the idea. Look, I what do we need to get the Canadian?
We gotta figure it out, because I think a lot of people, whether it's us or other podcasts together, right? Like even the conference last year in Toronto, the energy in places like that is incredible. Is incredible. You were there for a day too, right?
Yeah.
Like it's incredible. Because everyone there is like so on the same wavelength. You don't have to worry about, oh, well, the reason that deficits matter is X, Y, Z. Oh, the reason that GDP per capita is important.
Yeah, make it easier when everyone's on the same page.
You know what I mean? Like, I just want to dunk. I just want to dunk on Stephanie Kelton and fucking have a beer, right? Like, that's all I want to do. And let's find out ways to make it better. Now, we should talk about the conference a bit since it's coming up. Are you guys going to Montreal?
For the Friday.
You're going for the Friday.
Right? I won't be.
You're not going at all.
Why? Where are you again?
I start work on the Monday, so I'll be with friends that weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a pre God to be young again, a pre work weekend celebration.
Yeah. I'm starting my job. University. Yeah. Yeah. Like starting in May, because he has to go to, where are you going? Dominican or something?
Yeah. Dominican. Yeah. Punta Cana next
there's
week.
There's like another trip.
No, that's it.
No?
Trips are great. You should take trips when you
go. No, a couple graduation things are going on before.
I mean, that's fine. You're graduating. You only do that once, hopefully, anyway. The conference in Montreal, I think, is going to be super important for the Canadian scene for a couple reasons. If I look at the list of guests this year, a lot more American and international speakers than last year.
That speaker lineup is awesome.
It's really good. Saifedean is there.
Cool.
A few other people who, like, you will know, but off the top of my head, I can't remember a bunch of them. But it's a nice long list of people. And I think that, you know, this conference, unlike the one last year when the price was whatever, 20,000 or 25,000, this year it's 70. It's going to be a lot more hype around what we're doing. You know what I mean? And I want to see sort of the way that people are discussing what they're thinking about for their own Bitcoin holdings, right? Like, we talk a lot about, what are you going to do with your stack? You got this stack of Bitcoin in fiat terms that's worth X amount of dollars. What is my plan with this? Am I going to take a loan against it? Am I going to spend it? Am I going to use it for services? Am I going to buy a home? Am I going to buy a car? Am I going to do whatever? Now, those sort of goals are going to be so much loftier. Mm-hmm. And when people think that they have a chance to do something great, fucking, they might do something great. They might do something great, you know? And that's a big deal for a lot of people, because people have been buying Bitcoin a little bit every week for 5 years or 6 years. Just now, right? They're really like consistently above water, right? Their head is above water for the first time for an extended period. That's when people start to think about what they really can do to make a difference. And that's why I'm hopeful about that. Now, in terms of like what you guys are doing at Rockstar, right? You work there too now, so I can say you guys. Where do you see the, like, for your client base, the biggest risks in real estate have to be, it has to be short list, right? Government has got to be number one. Mm-hmm. Number two has probably got to be, I don't know, interest rates or something like that, which is another arm of the government. Mm-hmm. What else am I missing? No. A lot of Bitcoiners, by the way, refuse to call houses. They call them liabilities. Mm-hmm. Like, when I have people over to my house, they'll say, wow, I really like your liability. They won't say, mm-hmm, I really like your house.
Mm-hmm. Ah, fair enough. I mean, those are the biggest threats, that the governments are going to come across. The government's going to tax assets. I guess I want to differentiate between your primary place of residence.
Sure.
And like, if you have some rental properties.
Can I ask you something? How many people, in your opinion, in Canada, by percentage, let's say, of like 40 to 65 year olds, 40 to 75 year olds, have two properties?
The latest that I checked was, and this was talking to a mortgage broker, so don't hold me to this, was that 11% of mortgages in the country are for real estate that's not, you're not living in.
Huh.
And out of that 11%, I got to think it's some investors have multiple properties. So, you know, it's probably a small group of Canadians who actually have,
mm-hmm,
multiple properties or rental, or choosing real estate as a hard asset to protect some of their purchasing power.
Right.
It used to be like 4% when we started in this business. Now it's 11%. And that was 2008. So wild stat. And I don't know where that was referenced, so I can't like give a source on that, but I was just talking to a mortgage broker who gave me that stat. Government taxing real estate is a threat, and interest rates is your ultimate threat, because you, mm-hmm, just don't know what's going to happen. And we can see a couple interesting trends in real estate right now. We still have Canadians who are coming to us. So for example, we just had two surgeons reach out to somebody in our team saying, hey, look, I've done all the right things. I've S&P 500 index funds. I've done all the quote unquote right things. It doesn't seem to be working out. Help me get into the real estate market.
Yeah.
So we have to understand, there's some Canadians, to introduce Bitcoin to them is just such a leap they're just starting to understand that maybe a hard asset like real estate could work for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still happening. But then you have some advanced real estate investors who have multiple properties. So we actively have a couple real estate investors who have multiple properties who are choosing to sell some for Bitcoin. So they've gone down the rabbit hole now.
That's huge.
And yeah, that's new.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that. That's just a this year thing. So I just spoke to someone who I wouldn't call 100% Bitcoiner, but now they get the value proposition of Bitcoin, the store of value of Bitcoin. And they came to me. If I had to guess, I believe right now they have between 6 and 8 properties. They've worked really hard. You know, like this hasn't been something that's come easy to them.
Mm-hmm.
They've worked their ass off to be able to pull this off.
Sure.
And now they're saying, you know what? I'm selling one of my properties. And they're actively in touch with Bull Bitcoin.
Love it.
And they're going to be buying some Bitcoin. So I don't want to get everyone hopes up that like, oh my God, here we're seeing the demonetization of real estate. I don't really think we're there yet, but it's the very first sign of where I can see some investors, and I would call them advanced investors, who are saying, I want to rebalance here.
Mm.
I might have like 100% of my hard assets in real estate. What's this Bitcoin thing? I want to introduce some of that into my portfolio.
Or even like a mini micro strategy play, I'll call it, like a property that you already own. You can refinance, put that capital into Bitcoin, and the asset itself, as long as you can carry the property.
You just carry the debt instead?
Yeah.
That's an option that some real estate investors have for sure. But the long-term threat is what you said, like government coming out. And it's not just real estate, but like all assets.
It's
like
a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of honeypots out there.
It's Bitcoin too. We talked yesterday on the live stream about how in the budget, this kind of underreported tidbit about, I think starting next year or the year after, if this goes through, of course, there's a lot of, you know, ifs, ands, and buts these days with the election coming up next year. But the part of the tax reporting requirement for all Canadians would be you have to report your Bitcoin buys. So, you know, they're not printing those lists to admire them on the wall and frame them with, you know, nice plaques. They're going to start looking at how much you've made and whether they should tax unrealized gains or whatever, right? So, I mean, Bitcoin is vulnerable to this too, although a little bit more defensively so than real estate and business building and whatnot. I mean, what are you guys, when I think about your generation, one of the reasons I started buying Bitcoin is because I, you know, didn't want to play in the S&P. I had a house. And I saw that the S&P was going up 2-4% a year. So first it was weed stock speculation. And then like, basically like Bitcoin right after that, right? Are people who your age who can't afford a house?
I guess in the Rockstar Network too, I get a lot of questions. It's like, why don't you already have a investment property? Like, right?
Yeah.
And so right now, like, yeah, I don't want to sell any of my stack or all of it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make sense for me to sell my Bitcoin stack to buy a rental property. At some point, I still do like the leverage play on real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And in the future, I still would, even in Ontario, would like to buy a rental property. But right now, I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think too, just because I've grown up, I guess, with with him and whatever, Rockstar and everything,
I love this guy. I've gotten in shit so many times for not knowing how to address my dad when he's in the room.
With him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was never really thinking about investing in stocks to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of my friends too, real estate, I would say a lot of my friends too, the first kind of big investment they're thinking about is a rental property, probably over that, over investing in stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's easier to invest in stocks. They'll keep money in stocks. But I think the goal is to buy an investment property. I'd say for a lot of my friends.
Is it because you guys have seen?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the thing that always like kind of got my jimmies riled up when I was in university was that I was just thinking about like how easy we were to deal with as students. And we were paying, you know, back then it was like $350 or $400 a door or something like that.
Totally. I tell him all the time, my first rental property, I'd like to be a Western student rental.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
You know what the rents are on rooms at Western right now?
At Mac, $1,200 a door.
Yeah,
something like that.
Pretty, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That is on the higher side.
900.
I'd say the average is maybe like 950.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, no, there's 1,200.
And it's still a room this size.
Yeah.
No, this is big.
Is it for a bedroom? Yeah.
Should see. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's small.
I lived in some.
But then I guess a good transition though to back into Bitcoin is the when you show the four-year rolling compound average
of
Bitcoin, it's crazy.
This is from your deck on the weekend?
Yeah,
it probably
I haven't watched it yet. Anthony sent me the link to the slideshow.
And I think when you're talking about orange pilling, that's a good way to
That's way, a good way to start.
For some people my age, because then they can actually hear it, because some of my friends work on Bay Street and they work in some big funds. They work for pension funds. Yeah, they work in capital markets.
I think like the Fidelity and BlackRock too, though, ETFs do help with like the Wall Street people as well. Slightly. Sure. It has to.
Yeah, sure.
Because just to continue what you said there, that compound annual growth rate for my generation, that gets their attention. Because back
I think
in
it has to for mine as
forever.
Well,
for back me. In January, it's higher now. But in Jack in January, I ran it around my birthday, and it was I couldn't believe the number. Like it was 46% compounded annually from January 2020 to January 2024. That includes both run ups
and run downs
and the run down. Yeah. And I honestly couldn't believe it.
That's a COVID low too, right? The COVID low came in March 2020. So you add that as
you
well.
You include that. Yeah, that would be in there. So that's 46% compounded annually.
Mm-hmm.
That is tough to argue. And then if you look and compare that against the PE ratios of some companies that you would invest in, it just makes your mind like, and again, for my generation that looks at maybe financial markets with PE ratios and that kind of thing, it is hard to justify when you have this much data on Bitcoin now. Mm-hmm. When you look at the PE ratios that you're investing at some of these stocks in, it's like Bitcoin becomes a very hard thing to argue against.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And the other thing too, I would say is that if I look at the stock market, let's say you pick one of these like Mag 7 stocks, how many of the Mag 7 are under pressure from government because of their size and dominance? Tesla's under pressure because Elon owns Twitter. You see Microsoft can't close with Activision and Blizzard on a merger.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Google and Apple are under antitrust lawsuits for the app stores and for the color of your text message bubbles.
OpenAI must have the attention.
For sure they do. And so this is the other thing I think people don't realize when they're investing in stocks. There's execution risk, right? You have to hope that the CEO doesn't cheat on his wife at a fucking yacht party or something, because if he gets caught on camera, the stock tanks 15%. You have to hope that Tim Cook doesn't get hit by a bus, right? Mm. And you have to hope that some Senator Warren, Spurg doesn't freak out one day and say like, no, we can't have this company's too big. The market cap's too big. There's too much dominance. And they just come for you. All it takes is a Twitter post, knock your stock down 5%. People are going to realize at some point that the risk isn't in Bitcoin. It's in all this other stuff. And I think to your point earlier about the real estate, for a guy who owns 8 properties to sell one, many people who are skeptical would say, oh, it's only one property out of 8. I would say this guy went from 100% to not 100%. And he didn't go to the fucking VFD. He didn't go to the bonds.
And remember, he worked GICs. Hard to qualify the banks, you know, to be able to pull that off.
That's
to
a lot of pressure.
Equity in the other properties to try to pull that out, to buy another property, to deal with he has dealt with a lot. So to make the decision to let one go.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And that's in 2024. I've never seen that before. I can say that I've never seen that before multiple times. Maybe in 2023, I heard of someone, but now I'm seeing it multiple times with multiple people.
Right.
And I don't want it to seem like an avalanche. I haven't seen like this avalanche.
No, but it's starting.
It's starting.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean, like you said earlier, that the entire asset class is demonetizing. I own my home. I don't think that this was a bad investment. I don't think my first house was a bad investment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I said this to my dad the other day too, because he's a property guy. I said, you know, you have to look at the writing on the wall here and ask yourself if you're the one being kind of othered by the government now, you know, you're the one in the crosshairs. There seems to be a lack of willingness to address key issues and budgets and spending and things like that. And instead they're looking at business owners, the 1% or whatever. And like, you know, I don't think he's in the 1%. I don't think you guys are in the 1%. Why should you have to, you know, you started a business, you own a couple properties. Like, well, it's not a 1% thing. I'm just doing what was, you know, important to me, the right decision, get out of the dollar or the loony, I should say, and try and protect my family's wealth. Stuff was passed to me that I want to pass down.
And you're also vilified in the media.
Yeah.
Right? Like damn real estate investors.
You were telling weren't you telling me that one of the things you guys give to your clients is like prepare for your neighbors to hate you?
Yeah, basically. I think back in 2017, before we even really knew about Bitcoin, we were saying, hey, prepare to be vilified. Like everyone in this room, you're doing the right thing for you and your family, but you will be vilified in the media.
Yeah.
And we were calling that out years ago. And now to see it really start to come out is interesting.
Brutal.
There was something you were saying about that made me think about just my generation. So I'm 51.
Yeah.
And I think my generation and definitely the boomer generation ahead of me, they have done so well with this system that when you're talking to people of my age or older, mm-hmm. they really don't want to see Bitcoin or have any need for it. Because if they have a house and they have a cottage and they're going on vacation and they maybe started a company downtown Toronto, mm-hmm. or they're a partner at some law firm in Toronto, they kind of pat you on the head a little bit and say, hey, like, Tom, that's really cute. Yeah. Like, that's cute. Really nice thing. This Bitcoin thing, really nice. But, you know, I'm about to go to France this summer. Can you tell me, you know, my 2-week vacation? And maybe it's a stretch, but it's not like they are, it's an easy thing. They're going to spend money to do it. And yeah. it's a big decision to spend that money to do it. But they're more interested in like, hey, do you have a name of a hotel in Paris that you can recommend? Mm-hmm. Because they've done well. The system's kind of worked for them. So to speak to someone, and that's what interests me about people like Greg Foss and Jeff Booth, some of these guys who get it. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't really have to get it. There was no real incentive for them to get it.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like it's cool that you get it and Aiden's generation, but you guys were almost forced to get it. It was like, shit, what's going on with the system?
Yeah.
I need to look into it.
That's how I feel.
But some of these guys, they didn't really, you know, they've done pretty well. And that's honestly what impresses me about some of these guys the most. Like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. These guys didn't have to, there was no real incentive for them to get it.
Yeah.
There's no incentive for Greg going around talking the way he did and trying to educate an orange pill, mm-hmm. for Jeff to do the same kind of thing. And I feel really impressed by that kind of thing because people in my generation, they just think it's a cute little thing.
Yeah.
They don't see it as anything bigger. And I think that's kind of part of, unfortunately, the problem.
And I guess too, everyone in those generations, like the fiat world was just completely normal. And that's what they've known since they were a kid.
When we started the business, exactly. When we started the business, we were just talking about this at the office the other day. When we started the business, real estate was the only answer.
Yeah.
Like real estate was the escape hatch. Yeah. It was like, holy crap, we can do this real estate thing.
Well, we see that the results of that and the cost of real estate, right? Like everyone realized around the same time, this is the only thing you can do to protect yourself.
Well, you had those low rates for like 10 years. We rode a trend. Let's face it. We were a little lucky in getting into real estate and then staying in that. Some of it's not all smarts. Mm-hmm. You just have low interest rates and you're kind of riding that wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now we were just talking about this again. Can you imagine a world without Bitcoin right now? Without Bitcoin right now? And that's why the technology is so fascinating to me. And I think that's really kind of what sold me personally on it, was that when I started to understand the technology behind this thing, I thought it was just this cute little token online. Like I didn't get it until 2020. Mm-hmm. And then I had flashbacks to my Oracle days of like, holy smokes, this is a bigger technology. This is like, and I know this is probably an overplayed thing right now, but this is like TCP/IP. This is a new protocol. Mm-hmm. This isn't just some coin. This is a protocol. And when I started working at Oracle, I started in tech support. And in tech support, there was those of us that supported Windows and Unix. I don't know if you know about Unix or heard Unix. Okay. And then there was network support. So the guy who sat next to me, he supported Novell Networks. And I would ask him, I'm like, what's Novell Networks? And he's like, oh, not only do I support Novell Networks, I support NetBIOS and AppleTalk. And I'm like, what are these things? And he goes, these are other network protocols. And he goes, they're all dying off. And I'm like, well, why are they dying off? He's like, well, TCP/IP is just got the network effect and devoured everybody.
The open network?
The open network. Because Novell Networks was a closed network. It was like a corporate network. Novell NetWare was the name of the company. Mm-hmm. It was like a proprietary network. And it was a closed system because it was corporately owned versus TCP/IP that was open. So when I started learning about Bitcoin, then I had flashbacks to that conversation. I'm like, wait a second, this is an open monetary network against a closed system. And then I had another one with Linux. And I'm sure you've heard of Linux. But
my co-host who's in the chat, when he's not talking about NHL.
That's right. He's always talking to me. Okay, so when I was in tech support at Oracle, we supported AIX, Unix, Sun Microsystems, Unix, a whole bunch of flavors of Unix. And Sun Microsystems was like, everybody wanted the Sun Microsystems flavor of Unix. That was like, if you were a techie running an Oracle database, that was like the hot shit. Like you wanted Sun Microsystems.
The computers when we were kids in elementary school had Unix on them. I was thinking about this when you mentioned it a second ago. Yeah, anyway, go ahead. I'm having like flashbacks. So
Linux came out and Linux started devouring the market share of Sun Microsystems was a public company that Oracle then bought a few short years later. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was
pennies on the dollar. I don't know so then Linux took over that market share. Linux was open source and started eating lunch of the closed Unix systems. Mm-hmm. So then I was flashing back to like, this Bitcoin thing's open. another example of a closed system devouring an open system. And Bitcoin just started to make more and more sense. And I remember a few friends used to work at BlackBerry. BlackBerry was a closed system. All the communications used to go through Waterloo.
Yep.
And then the iPhone came out, and the iPhone was using TCP/IP. And it just devoured BlackBerry that couldn't really handle and grow and scale using their closed system.
Yeah.
So to me, again, it was just all these technologies that were just closed systems that the open system devoured. And that's how I look at Bitcoin. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is an open network. This is inevitable. This is an inevitable thing. And that's kind of really just led me down the path of Bitcoin, getting more and more confidence in Bitcoin. And then the pureness of the technology stack in Bitcoin is really interesting. When I worked at Oracle, we tried to launch database technology. Stop me if this is like too
crazy. Keep going.
Inside the database, and this is where I started to understand Ethereum. Inside the Oracle database, they tried to launch portals. So portals were things like on the internet now that everyone knows, like you could log into a website.
Oh, yeah, like a portal. Okay.
Tried to do is, instead of on the tech stack, run it as separate technologies, which was much better and much faster, Oracle tried to embed the portal software inside the database. So this website that you would visit was executing inside an Oracle database. Mm-hmm. Which I don't want to get too technical here, but that is chaos. Like, that is shit. It ran slow. It was hard to, I used to support it. We used to try to sell this stuff, but then other people were competing against us and they would separate it out. It was just like, the database should just do what the database does. And the execution layer of software launching the websites should be the best at doing that. And they should be two separate things. So then when I started to learn about Ethereum, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're trying to do everything inside this one layer.
Yeah.
Just like when I was at Oracle and we tried to stick everything inside the database as the value proposition of the Oracle database was like, you just need this one database.
It's everything.
And I was the guy installing it, trying to make it work. And it wasn't quite as good as separating it out. And it taught me that tech stacks should be very simple and clean if they're going to scale. So like, I had all these flashbacks when I was going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole to my old tech days. I'll stop now on the tech stuff, but it just gave me clarity. I'm looking at you guys. I'm like, is this just crazy? No,
but this is important, right? Like, this is why Bitcoin is so much fun, because people come to it from different points of view, right? Like, you remember the database thing. You're like, this is not simple enough on the east side. Great simplicity and open network on the Bitcoin side. This thing's going to be the one that.
Yeah, I thought you did a good job dumbing it down to in that like open versus closed network presentation that you gave at the event.
Yeah,
which is kind of what you just mentioned.
Communicate that. Yeah.
And I think too, you and Len were talking about Lightning, and like you were talking about an open network, and maybe if Lightning might not be the layer two that's can scale and be the layer two forever. But I think it was Jack Mahler saying like, it almost doesn't matter. I don't know if it was Jack Mahler talking about this, but like an open network, it doesn't matter. Like the best product will always win. So yeah. Lightning could be a step. I think Len was saying this as well. Lightning is just a step to the next best thing if it's not Lightning. And I don't know. The analogy was like, there was MySpace and then there was Facebook.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
So on the open network, just the best products win.
Everyone is like, it's a big deal to me that people have this point of view that Bitcoin is just a network. It's not necessarily a finished product. It's not done being built yet. It's not done developing. But the baseline thing, the mining, the issuance, the difficulty adjustment, all that stuff, that's never going to change. That's your value prop.
Yeah.
That's your value prop.
That layer one. That did take me a while to understand
everything
as well.
else, you know?
Yeah.
And so do you get it now?
Totally.
Yeah.
But it took hours probably for sure.
Hours is nothing, man. People, you know, I've been throwing this stuff at people in my life for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. But
credit to YouTube, because I know how difficult it can be to Orange Bowl, and I know you guys both have. So, and I know it's difficult. It's not easy. And you guys have managed to do it.
When we were in England, we brought a good friend of ours, Jonathan, who moved to the UK. And he's like, you're coming to the UK. I'm like, I'm going to this Bitcoin conference. Join me if you want. But I just want you to know something. Like, I'm really interested in this. I'm not going to this conference. Like, back in the corporate days, you would go to conferences as an excuse to just go to restaurants.
You can go to Vegas and then,
but I'm like, I'm going to this conference. I actually want to pay attention.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in this stuff. Yeah. So like, if you're coming here, just know that I'm not like not going. Yeah. I'm going to be in there listening. And he came and at the beginning, they launched the conference and they were screaming, Bitcoin. Nice. And he looked at me and goes,
where am I?
What is this? Where have you taken me? And I'm like, just stick with it. While I'm screaming Bitcoin.
Okay, last question. Off the beaten path a little bit. I'm bringing my wife to Montreal for the conference.
Awesome.
What advice do you have for me so that she doesn't go crazy
watching some of the stuff. She doesn't, she thinks she's not going to watch any of it. I'm demanding that she come to at least a few things, including the, like, I'm going to be on a panel. Like, you have to come to that.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah, cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everyone's got to come at it at their own time.
What does your wife think about Bitcoin? What do you tell her? What do you talk to her about?
I don't know. What does mom think about Bitcoin?
I don't know. She probably gets annoyed at us sometimes at the dinner table.
We talk about it a lot. We talk about it a lot. No, we're talking to her about the halving. I'm like, the halving's tonight, Carol. The halving
is tonight. And then I know. She, you know what?
Get a good bottle of wine.
Mom said that. Like, mom said that because that was when I came up from London. She goes, Dad told me this 5 times today. Yeah.
So
no, but I think mom has a good understanding.
Yeah. Totally. Now after years, she's
I think so too.
I think she likes
even
it.
My little sister Sienna is stacking.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean? How old is your little sister?
Grade 12.
Okay, so she's not a kid.
No.
Okay. Sorry. I'm gonna say like Len's daughter's like 10 or something. She's got a little stack like
being built up. Yeah. Sienna's definitely more interested in price action for sure. But
she's very interested in the price action.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Is Bitcoin up today?
That's the ticket. Okay, let's get you guys out of here. Final comments, closing thoughts.
I mean, love what you're doing. I think you don't like to hear it. I don't think you and Len like
it. I like to hear it, but I think that we're not the only ones. You're doing it too.
Yeah, no, we're all doing
it. When are you going to start? Everyone in Rockstar's got a podcast.
I'll hop on some episodes.
I see guys in Florida talking to guys who I don't know about. This guy, he bought a house once. Let's get him on a video.
I'm looking forward to the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast live events right across the country. That's what I'm looking forward to, and that's what I want to leave you with. So thank you.
Yeah, shout out to CBP.
Yeah.
We'll start now, Phil.
Yeah, say hi to Len. Say hi to Len.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming. Busy room, but go back to work now. Don't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, my brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you'd like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.